This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's Broadband Wireless Access World. We're about to speak to Ron Segue, who is the president and CEO of Tropos Networks. Welcome to Utopia Media's Broadband Wireless Access World.
Thanks, Mark. I'm pleased to be with you.
We're mainly going to be talking about a letter that the Community Broadband Coalition sent to the U.S. Senate. Tell us what the Community Broadband Coalition is.
Well, you know, it's a group of companies and nonprofit organizations that have gotten together in support of really municipal self-determination on the topic of telecommunication services.
The list of members is too long to go through here, and it's going to be on the letter that's connected from this webpage. But give us just some exemplary members of the coalition to show what sectors are represented.
Well, you know, the AARP, American Association of Retired People, is a good example. The American Public Power Association is another example, which represents municipal power companies around the United States, Intel Corporation, Tropos. So it's a wide range of groups that all believe that broadband ought to be more readily available, cheaper, and that there should be more competition at the local level.
Okay, and the letter, which is, of course, connected from this page as well, is in support of S-1294, the Community Broadband Act of 2005. What would that act do if Congress passes it?
Well, it would effectively allow municipalities to freely be in the business of providing telecommunication access, so, you know, specifically broadband access, whether it's wireless or fiber to the home. You know, today there are a variety of laws at the state level that either prohibit or make it difficult for municipalities to be in these businesses and to offer these services.
Did you want to talk a little bit about the politics about this, about who's behind these restrictions? And if you can, maybe talk about the connection between the essentially lobbying or legislation as business competition by other means and the larger picture of the technologies and the companies that are supporting them and the efforts that are being made to expand broadband in the U.S. And how that all works together.
Sure. Well, let me start, I guess, with the facts. You know, and it really just takes a couple. One is the United States today is ranked 16th in the world in terms of broadband availability per capita.
Is that a problem in terms of global economic competitiveness?
You know, there's certainly many of us who believe that there's a correlation between being able to access the internet easily and cheaply, and economic competitiveness, absolutely. You know, there's the direct connection, being able to do business online, and then there's the indirect one that affect our children in schools and at home, and you know, lots of other examples. So yes, you know, we're starting from the fundamental premise that you know, reliable and inexpensive internet access is highly correlated with economic productivity.
Are other countries taking actually practical advantage of having more broadband in the educational, cultural, economic spheres?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you have to look to Asia, the most obvious examples. Broadband penetration in Korea and Japan, you know, which are among the most wired or unwired countries in the world. You know, there's 20 megabits per second of broadband access, you know, for literally, you know, $10 or $15 a month. Wireless broadband is available very, very broadly.
In fact, even when we say broadband, have we sort of defined this down in the U.S.? And when other countries talk about broadband penetration, they're actually talking about faster connections than...
Absolutely. So, you know, this is a very... a very political topic. You know, specific example I'm sure you're referring to is the fact that the FCC in the United States defines a broadband connection as anything more than, I think, 200 kilobits per second, which is really only four times dial-up.
How do you more or less define
broadband? A megabit, DSL speeds are better, so okay. a megabit.
Or five times the government standard.
Five times the government standard. The other fact is the FCC defines availability as if there is one broadband connection in a zip code, that is deemed the entire zip code is served.
So how important are these definitional issues? Because if the government says we're for universal broadband, and by that they mean one user at 200 kilobits per second in each zip code, and the rest of the world means megabytes that people are actually using, what implications does that have for public policy?
Well, it certainly means we're making public policy based on faulty data. So, if we were to measure apples to apples, we certainly wouldn't be 16th. We'd be much lower. I can't tell you how much because the data just isn't available. But, these definitions were adopted by the FCC because they were under pressure to show that we were making very significant progress in terms of broadband penetration. And, President Bush, declared a couple of years ago that ubiquitous broadband was a policy goal of his administration, and we've made no progress, even with these very favorable definitions.
Okay. Now, apart from the definitions, in terms of the situation on the ground or in the ground or over the ground, to say a little bit about the ecosystem of broadband provision and who's providing how much of it now and how much competition there is between them and what the role of municipal Wi-Fi is within that context.
Sure. So today, almost all the broadband in the United States is provided by the two incumbents, the wireline incumbent providing DSL, the AT&T/SBC's and Verizon's of the world.
It's not really slash anymore. It's not slash anymore. It's AT. They're AT&T now.
Yeah. Okay. It's still confusing to people. Because
right.
It's like,
I know.
AT&T. What's that? So right.
Right.
It's only
I appreciate.
AT&T
right.
Now.
I understand.
And by the cable operators, Comcast, Time Warner Cable, etc.
And how good a job have they done?
We're 16th in the world as a result of the progress they've made to date.
Okay, and what does municipal wireless offer as an alternative in terms of speed and ubiquity?
Well, one other point on how good a job they've done.
Right.
Even in areas where they claim to have ubiquitous coverage, Philadelphia, for example, the city itself estimates that 60% of the residents of Philadelphia don't have access to broadband, either because they physically can't get it or because the pricing is prohibitive for the means of low-income families. So
okay.
there is this digital divide, or some call it redlining phenomenon that's going on where these incumbents are choosing not to serve areas because they believe it's uneconomic to do so.
And again, talk about how economic it is for the whole society to leave vast swaths of area and vast groups of people outside of the digital commons that's being created now.
Well, and if you believe that that access to information, that being conversant with the internet and internet technology is highly correlated with success in future society, then it's hugely damaging that 60% of the families in Philadelphia don't have access to a broadband connection at home, even if they may have one at school.
And
it just furthers the inequality if a wealthy child, in the suburbs can, use their laptop at school and go home and finish their assignments, but a poor child in the inner city can't.
Even taking it in the other direction in terms of not people acquiring skills through education that's mediated by broadband, but in terms of delivering entertainment program to people, obviously there's a movement now to put video distribution through broadband, and that's going to mean the lack of universal broadband would mean smaller markets for those content providers who want to sell or give away and advertise on their content, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, and all sorts of other issues that are related to lack of competition. SBC or AT&T has threatened to charge Google and Yahoo and MSN for carriage because they believe that those entities are making money and getting the AT&T services for free, so they're going to start potentially charging Google for those services, which means it'll be harder for us to access Google. We all love Google. It's the most popular search engine in the world. So there's just a lot of dynamics that the lack of competition is creating that are bad for the consumer.
Okay, well, it seems like that we need some hero to enter into this scene here and save the day. How about a broadband wireless set up by communities?
Yeah, and that's really the heroes started out being just the community themselves. There are many communities across the United States that have been laying their own fiber and laying their own cables, to create more competition to the incumbents. Lafayette, Louisiana, is an example of that, where they decided to, in this case, to dig up the streets and install fiber to the home, and the incumbents, quickly said, hey, that's foul. The city shouldn't be in this business, et cetera. So even, before broadband wireless came along, cities were so desperate to introduce competition that they were spending, literally tens of millions of dollars to dig up the streets and pull alternatives.
So, of course, there is an alternative that doesn't involve pulling or digging up streets, and that's wireless. Talk a little bit about Tropos and its technology and what kind of broadband solutions Tropos could deliver.
Right. So more recently, wireless broadband technologies are replacing and augmenting, wires, whether it's over, on telephone poles or through the street. And our technology is really the fastest, cheapest, and simplest broadband access technology around. It's it uses standard vanilla Wi-Fi, 802.11g as we call it, same Wi-Fi you have in your laptops and you use at Starbucks and you use at home. We've built it into an outdoor optimized package that is hung from a street lamp, any old city street lamp. It's plugged in. We deploy 20 of these per square mile, and now you have, in effect, a Wi-Fi hotspot over the entire square mile.
And what kind of speeds are we talking about?
Anywhere from 1 megabit per second to 15 to 20 megabits per second. Depends on how close you are to the antenna and how the city chooses to provision the network.
And what's the relative cost of putting broadband into a square mile with wireless versus digging up the streets for fiber?
One-third the cost, one-third the time, with equal performance. And so from a consumer's perspective, it means that we can and we are delivering those kind of speeds in cities for, as little as $15 a month. So true broadband, $15 a month, no 2-year commitments, no need to buy a device to go into the home.
And this 15, is there a need to get a device to go in the home? Do the units that use this Wi-Fi need to have cards or some other kind of accoutrement to connect them to the network?
There needs to be some kind of a Wi-Fi, device or a Wi-Fi radio in the device you're using. 80% of the laptops sold in the United States in the last 12 months have come with Wi-Fi already included. Cell phones are coming this year that will have Wi-Fi already built in.
Can Wi-Fi be used economically to deliver service to businesses and residences?
Yeah, absolutely. It works equally well for a business or a residence. We're in many cases serving particularly nomadic businesses, trades. Plumbers, construction workers, real estate agents, et cetera, as well as fixed access for particularly small and medium businesses that are very price sensitive and don't want to pay $1,500 a month for a T1 line.
And what kind of applications? What can small businesses do with wireless that they can't do without it?
Anything that they can do in their office, they can now do anywhere. Around town. So, for example, if I'm a real estate appraiser and I go out and appraise a house, I can make the notes and take the pictures, with my handheld device, and I can transmit it back, back to the to my firm and have it available online. In New Orleans, to give you a very poignant example, we have a Tropos network down there, and as a consequence, the the building inspectors who have to go through and inspect every damaged home to declare it safe for entry. They're able to be 10 times more productive by accessing these their databases at the house or at the building as opposed to having to go back to the office to make their entries.
So, and that's been set up relatively rapidly, hasn't it?
In a matter of weeks.
Okay. What's a mesh topology, and how does that figure into all this?
So a mesh is simply, as we have hung these 20 radios per square mile, the radios communicate with one another wirelessly, and out of these 20 or so radios in a square mile, only 2 to 3 of them have to be connected off to the Internet. The rest of them communicate wirelessly. So it dramatically simplifies the deployment of a broadband network.
And how are they connected back to the Internet, what's called backhaul?
They can be connected using the city's own fiber, as is the case in New Orleans and Oklahoma City. But more commonly, the backhaul itself is wireless. It's a wireless technology known as WiMAX, which is a point-to-point connection. So you put a base station on a tall building. You would put a what's called a subscriber module and connect it into the Tropos node. And then the rest of the nodes, the rest of the Tropos nodes would communicate with that one node, and you'd have a network.
Okay, one more technical question before we wrap up with the political side of all this. What are the prospects for more throughput through wireless in the next few years?
Well, the beauty of Wi-Fi wireless is that progress, both in terms of throughput and speed and in terms of features, is being made at an ever-increasing rate. And it's just typical with what's called open standard technologies, which Wi-Fi is, that this happens. So, Ethernet is another example of an open standard technology that started out at 2 megabits per second and then went to 10, 100, 1,000, and each subsequent speed jump took less and less time to accomplish. Same thing's happening in Wi-Fi. We started out in 1997 at 2 megabits per second. By 99, we had gone to... by 2001, we had gone to 11. By 2003, we'd gone to 54. And next year, we'll be transmitting at 150 to 300 megabits per second using Wi-Fi technology. So the rate of increase here exceeds any other radio technology on Earth.
Okay. Say a little bit about first responders and their intercommunication and the fact that the 9/11 Commission reported last week that situation is still not satisfactory, and what kind of solution wireless could provide in terms of intercommunication for first responders.
Well, the good thing about, and to be fair, most of the... most of the focus on intercommunication is revolving around voice communication.
Right.
This is, actually the radios, the voice radios that are in police cars. Whereas what we offer is data communication,
right,
which could be used to for voice.
Right.
But today is primarily data. But the good news about Wi-Fi is, by definition, every city and every agency that uses Wi-Fi, by definition, is using the same technology and the same access methods and the same application.
So they can use the same end-user devices, and they can communicate on the same network.
So it's now simply a matter of ensuring that they can all access a common network, which is simply a matter of giving them the right logons and passwords.
Right, and in fact, by standardizing on a technology like this, it would mean that essentially all the first responders around the country could pool their purchasing power and buy units that are compatible and lower
cost. And that's already happening in places like the San Francisco Bay Area, where communities are getting together and creating standards for purchasing, deploying, and using metro-scale Wi-Fi networks to achieve exactly this objective of mutual aid.
Okay. Let's wrap up by talking about the politics of the Community Broadband Act of 2005 and what you were intending to do with this letter and what kind of impact you've had, and going forward, what kind of strategy you're pursuing to get support and passage of this bill.
Well, our goal is really totally simple, which is that we believe that that more competition is good. It's just the American way. You know, competition lowers prices, improves service levels, makes products more available, et cetera. And it's, you know, no different whether you're talking about toothpaste or whether you're talking about broadband access.
Address the argument made by the incumbent cable and phone companies that it's unfair for municipalities with their vast financial resources and advantages to compete with them.
Well, the specific point that the two specific points that are made, one has really nothing to do with, you know, them as businesses, but, you know, as quote unquote good American citizens, which is, gee, we're saving the citizens from themselves because, cities shouldn't be using taxpayer dollars to build out these networks. They should really leave it to the professionals, which is us, which, you know, of course, totally ignores the point that AT&T gets a very significant portion of their revenues from so-called lifeline services, which is nothing more than a tax subsidy, et cetera. So that's kind of the good citizen argument they make, which, of course, our view is, look, duly appointed local officials should decide how taxpayer money is spent or not spent.
I don't see an argument being made that local streets and highways should be built by private companies.
Well, in fact, there are local streets and highways that are built by private companies. They're called tollways, and there are private taxis along with public buses. And, you know, each city decides the right mix for their citizens of public expenditure versus private. So our first point is, you know, that decision should be left to the localities and should not be usurped by the states or the federal government.
But in fact, local essential commodities or utilities like streets, water, electricity often are provided already.
That's right.
by government agencies.
That's right, and there are those who argue that that broadband access is as vital a utility as water or sewage or electricity.
And in fact, a service, national defense, for which $500 billion is spent every year, give or take, it is also something done by the public to defend and protect itself, isn't
That's
it?
That's right. That's right. And I personally am sympathetic with that. But my fundamental point and the point of the McCain-Lautenberg legislation is that it really ought to be the local elected officials to decide the right mix for their particular community.
Okay, and you're going to make another point about that.
Yeah. So the other point that the incumbents make is, the cities are in a position to tax us and to grant us right of ways or not on the city street lamps and the telephone poles, et cetera. And they are in a position to unfairly compete with us by not taxing themselves, but taxing us, and by not giving us rights of way, but giving themselves rights of way, which the McCain-Lautenberg bill does acknowledge that all competition ought to be on a arm's length and, you know, equal footing.
So essentially it does two things. It says it's okay for the cities to build municipal Wi-Fi networks, and it's incumbent upon them to protect the rights of incumbents and new entrants from the private sector and treat everyone equally.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, the incumbents have a big budget that they have, a lot of money that they can spend to influence public opinion to make the arguments that we've just refuted over and over and over and over and over again. What kind of resources does the Community Broadband Coalition have to present its case both to the public and to the legislators who are going to make these decisions?
Well, you know, the good news is that while we do have some powerful allies in Intel and APPA and AARP, we also have the benefit of tremendous popular opinion, or what I call 1,000 points of light. You know, the fact of the matter is that since January of 2004, more than 300 cities have deployed their own broadband wireless networks or have partnered with private companies like Earthlink to deploy these networks, and another 200 have indicated that they will be deploying in the next 12 months. Cities like San Francisco and Houston and Atlanta and Portland. I mean, these are big cities. Even Chicago planning to deploy. So this is a very popularist movement that the incumbents, it's turning into a whack-a-mole game for them. Right? They knock someone down, someone else comes up. So You know, I think even they are starting to acknowledge the genie is too far out of the bottle on this one to stick it back in.
Okay. I want to let you wrap up with a final statement about what kind of future you see after the passage of the Community Broadband Act of 2005 through the deployment of more broadband wireless networks.
Well, I see the same future that that we've seen in the last 5 to 10 years in the cellular industry. The cellular industry, you know, used to be very similar in that there was two incumbents. It was an oligopoly. There wasn't much price competition, service competition. Coverage was bad, service was bad, et cetera. And then rules were changed that allowed the third, fourth, fifth operator to come in. Prices fell, service levels improved. We got great new services like SMS and what have you. And the same thing's going to happen with broadband internet access, only it's going to happen at a tremendously enhanced pace because now it's an open standard activity versus cellular, which was mostly controlled by Qualcomm. So I see a bright future, and I'm really happy with the progress we've made technically as well as politically.
Okay. I want to thank you very much for talking to us today on Utopia Media's Broadband Wireless Access World, and hope that this program and future ones will be broadcast over wireless networks to a growing audience.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me, Mark.
Okay. Bye.